What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL, joined as always by my co-host, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, I am looking forward to the new kickoffs. That's
oh,
all
yeah.
I'm going to say. Looking forward to them.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Like what we're referring to, obviously, for anybody who hasn't been on social media today, hadn't been on any of your Twitters or whatnots, is today down at the league meeting, the owners meeting, they passed a new kickoff rule. And if any of you have watched the XFL last week, and as we get into dive into a little bit deeper here in a minute, I'll show a video, but it's going to really resemble the XFL's kickoff, which when the XFL put that in, the statement was made that they were testing this stuff out, to, you know, see the, what it would look like for the NFL. Nighthawk, you have not missed the intro music.
Nope.
We're going to get to that here in a second. This is that cold open.
I jumped the gun a little bit.
He did. He jumped the gun. it's called a cold open, and then we'll hit the intro and then we'll get into it. So I guess without further ado, we might as well just get into it. And you're not wrong, Charles Nash. This is the new draft hat.
This is the first. We were talking before the show started. This is the first year. And I'm probably still not going to get one, but this is the first year that I can remember that I legitimately like the designs for the new hats, because they're. I'm a more basic person. I don't
right.
like
you've
it
always
with a
been,
whole bunch of stuff all over
yeah,
my hat.
I was about to say, you've always been more of what I would call a traditionalist, simplistic designs, things like that.
That's why, personally, the current – I know a lot of people are going to say are going to give me a lot of pushback on this, but right now, personally, I much prefer the current jerseys to the previous jerseys or even the ones before that, because it's – very much more simplified.
It's a simplistic now there's some aspects, if we want to deviate on some jersey talk for just a minute, I would love a red helmet with this logo. I know everybody loves a red helmet with a throwback logo. I myself am not a huge fan of the throwback logo. I think this is a better logo, but I would love, I still love the throwback uniforms, when they do the whole throwbacks once or twice a year.
Yep.
But I would love to have an alternate helmet that was a red helmet with the modern Falcons logo on it.
I'm telling you right now, man, if you take the current throwback jerseys, leave everything about them exactly the same, red helmets, same jerseys, same everything. And literally just changed the classic logo to the new logo and said, "Hey, there's our new uniforms."
Oh, dude.
I would be the happiest man in the state of Georgia.
Yeah. No, I would be ecstatic. I mean, honestly, I would be ecstatic. Alberto likes how I've used my stadium cup. It's my pencil holder, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's the way to do it.
That's right. Chris says, good afternoon, all. Do you think the Falcons had a good idea this new kickoff rule would be put in place, so the signing of Ray makes even more sense? You know what? I'll tell you this, and y'all are gonna scoff at me. Y'all are gonna do whatever. You're gonna roll your eyes. But of course, they had that insight. Rich McKay is the CEO, yeah, or CFO, or whatever his title is now. That's one of the main reasons why Arthur Blank has even stated that Rich McKay, he values his input because of, his connections in the rest of the league, aka the competition committee. He chairs up the competition committee. So yeah, not only did I think Zach Robinson wanted more speed, these last few years they were trying to play bully ball and didn't really have anybody who could consistently take the top off. Well, it's also because you didn't have anybody who could consistently get them the ball to take the top off. So we'll just leave it at that. But, you know, yeah, of course they knew that this was coming because it had been talked about for a while, really. Yeah. So, and speaking of that, go ahead.
We've been here. We heard about this like in the last weeks of the season last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You started hearing people talk about, you know, people who, you know, or even last year when they saw the new kickoff with the XFL, you started hearing a lot of people be like, man, I would really love for this to be in the NFL because it's, you know, you get more excitement that, you know, it brings like the kickoff means something.
Yep.
Now.
Yep.
Right.
Okay. And so what we're talking about, all right, here we go. This is a clip. It's kind of grainy, so I didn't have the time nor the effort put into it to go find a really crisp video. But this will give you an idea. You got the two starting lines, right? This is the kicking team, the receiving team, right? And they're starting. The kicking team is on the receiving team's 35-yard line, all right? Kicker still sets up at the same spot as he always does. And then you have the return guys back over here. We'll see here in a second. So you kick the ball, maybe. Okay. So here's the difference. You can't move until this ball gets into the target zone. Okay. Yep. The target zone, if I'm understanding it right, is the 20 back.
Okay. Well, 20 to the goal line to the out to the 20.
Out, yeah, goal line out to the 20. That's the target zone. So if you got some strategy and you want to kick it, try to coffin nail it over here, right? Like they can't, nobody moves until that ball enters the target zone.
Or until he catches it in the target zone.
Right. So then now he's got all this space to get up to speed before, you know, coming in contact. So, and then now you can block it up different. So that was one of them. I'm going to see if I can find this other one. That was a really good one. So we keep talking about this while I look for
it. But yeah, so like, and we'll see it again if he can find the thing he's wanting to find. But there's two different ways of kicking into the end zone. And it changes where that ball comes out depending on how it's kicked into the end zone. If it's kicked and lands in the target zone, so between the goal line and the 20, and then rolls into the end zone, I think that comes out to the 25.
Believe so.
And then, but if they kick it and the ball lands, either hits the end zone or the guy catches it in the end zone, then at that point, I think it comes out to the 35. And if you don't kick it far enough, so it bounces and hits before the 20-yard line, I think it comes out to like the 40 or something like that.
I'll find – I want to show you this one other play, and then I'll pull up like the full like rule set, and we'll talk about what it is. All right, let's see here. I'm going to make this bigger. Okay, so here's where it could get interesting if you want to get creative, right, and if you want to have some fun. So this is from the Battle Hawks game last year, I believe it was. So let's see. All right. And at some point in time, it is possibly going to start playing. Maybe. You got to be kidding me. Come on now. What is the problem? Stupid Twitter and its playback. Come on, Elon. Oh, well. Okay. Anyway, what they did was they basically did like an end around, or, you know, and one guy caught it, was running this way, and then flipped it to the other guy. So there was like some trickeration, which you don't ever get to see on a kickoff.
Yep. And you see so many people. I see so many people on Twitter, you know, or in other places but specifically Twitter, that they talk about the new football, you know, the new kickoff rule, how, you know, what do you think? And then people under there are like, it's going to be flag football. It's going to, you know, Devin Hester, you know, this, you know, there's never going to be another guy like him again. And my thing was like, this new rule like increases the chances that you're going to see great kickoffs again.
Right, because right now
for returners again.
Like I'll put you like this, like straight up and down, these last few years, like kickoff has been unwatchable. Like that was the time you got up and left because there nothing happening.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the full like rules. So it says, okay, landing zone is the area between the team's goal line and the 20. Any kick that hits short of the landing zone, treated like a kickoff out of bounds and the ball will be spotted at the 40.
Yep.
Play would be blown dead as soon as the kick lands short of the landing zone. Any kick that hits the landing zone must be returned. So there's no more you ain't fair catching it.
Yep. No.
Okay. So it must be returned. Any kick that hits the landing zone and then goes into the end zone must be returned or downed by the receiving team. If it's downed, then a touchback's at the 20-yard line.
So that's actually a penalty on the receiving team.
Right.
Because in the past, that would have been out to the 25.
Correct.
So now it's like, hey, you had the opportunity to go catch it. You let it go into the end zone.
Uh-huh.
And then you didn't even try to return it. You just downed it in the end zone. So
you're down at the 25 or at the 20.
Yep.
Kick hits the end zone, stays in bounds, returned or downed. If downed, then the touchback to the 30-yard line. So I guess if you get it and then down it, you go to the 30.
If you catch it in the end zone or it hits, bounces around, you grab it, then down it, then it goes to the 30. So you get a little bit of a bonus on top of the old one because the kicking team kicked it into the end zone.
Right.
It wasn't like the receiving team let it get to the end zone.
Any kick that goes out of the back of the end zone in the air or bounces, touchback to the 30. So what they're trying to do here is they are wanting you to return the ball. They're wanting you to catch it and run with it. Like because now these kickers are going to be trying to drop it at the one, you know, and not have it bounce or whatever, you know, to go through the back of the end zone because they don't want to take it out to the 30, giving it an extra. Okay, so miscellaneous, no fair catch. No fair catch or signals allowed. Official will blow it dead. If conditions cause the ball to fall off the tee twice, I ain't worried about that.
So here's the difference. So in the past, if cause the ball to fall off the tee twice, then the kicker will be allowed to use a kicking stick to keep the ball in place. You had to have a return player
come
over and hold it.
Right. Okay. Onside kick. Now this is a new, fourth quarter begins. The team trailing has the opportunity to declare an onside kick to the officials. Current onside kick rules would apply if onside kick goes beyond the setup zone untouched, the kicking team penalized. So they're changing the onside kick as well. Which I thought that would be, so I don't think there's going to be any more like surprise onside kicks.
No, because you can't.
Yeah, you can't surprise onside kick because of how it's all right. Penalties. I don't really care about penalties. I don't know. Do we care about penalties? The setup zone and landing zone will not change with any penalties that carry over to kickoffs. Alignment of 10 kickoff team players and all receiving team players would not change, only the spot. Yeah, this is like tedious stuff there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the kickoff, which I think will at least make it fun and interesting. I enjoyed the kickoffs when I watched the XFL, which, by the way, that's starting this weekend for any of you like psychotic football fans out there like myself who just want to watch football. The new UFL will be kicking up here soon this weekend.
This weekend, yeah, I saw that. So I'm gonna try to make sure that I try to catch some of those. There's only like four games, but I want to see if I can catch But they all seem to be on radio, but not TV.
They should be. I think they're.
Oh no! TV. Never mind. Never mind. There's two on Fox on Saturday. So it looks like Fox has the Saturday games. ESPN has the Sunday games.
Right. So for any of you football degenerates, King Seven says, if the returner don't know his stuff, it's going to be a long day for that team. Yeah. And also, like, this is going to even more separate, like, good special team coordinators. We all the time talk about, you know, offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators. Very rarely do we ever even talk about or mention special teams coordinators. And, you know, in the heyday of the Patriots, like, their special teams stole them some possessions a handful of times throughout the year, which really helped them win some games. So if you can get you a really good special teams coordinator, especially now, who actually has some creativity, he might be able to, you know, get you a touchdown or possessions, or like, because now you can really do some scheming, you know, on how you want that return to take place.
Well, and like you said, since the rules changes, since the previous rule changes have gone into effect, like, there was no having a guy who was like your specialist kickoff return guy was almost a non-factor. Yeah, you get a guy to return one every now and then, but it wasn't in most cases worth the risk. Like, if you caught it in the end zone, which is where most of those kicks were going, if they weren't even going out of the end zone, if you were grabbing it, you were probably 5 to 6 yards deep in the end zone. So to even make it worthwhile, you're talking, you got to make up 30 yards.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times guys were not getting back to the 25. So, you know, unless you had a guy that was really good back there, and the guys that were really good back there, a lot of times were very specialized guys that, yeah, they would play on offense, but they weren't like huge contributors on offense. But they were the guys that you got because of the kickoff.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to find.
That was essentially just becoming a thing. Like, why do we even have a guy for kickoffs in this scenario?
I was trying to find, like, it was Warren Sharp, who is like a stats savant kind of guy. Here we go. In 2023, it was a 73% touchback rate, by far the highest it had ever been. Mm-hmm. So 73% of the kickoffs were going for touchbacks. 4 kickoffs returned for touchdown, fewest since at least 2000. So that's 24 years of, and then let's see, 41 onside kicks, fewest since at least 2000. And he goes on to say something needed to be done. Right. And this is, you know, what they attempted to try to get done was to try to put some more excitement while also feeling like they are keeping like it safer, and which now kind of transitions into the other new rule that they put in place, which was they're trying to ban the hip drop tackle.
Well, they're not trying to.
Well, they banned
it. They did.
right. Well, they're trying to get it out of the game, right?
Yes.
So I'm just trying to see if I can find the wording on that. See if I can get that pulled up. But because the way they described it, this sounds like a lot of people made it sound like it was one of those things that it wasn't going to be enforced as much as, you know, as much as some people thought it might be.
I think it's probably going to be a situation where if it's flagrant, like really, really, really apparent,
right,
then it's probably going to get called. My guess would be if they tell the refs, like, if you are not 100% sure, then don't throw the flag, and we'll just do it on the back end with fines and what have you.
Right.
Which if they can keep it to that, that's cool. And what I will say is what they should be doing, and what I would be doing if I was a football coach, is I would be showing them nonstop. And I'm not saying you don't have bad tackles there either. You do, but you also have generally much better form tackling, and just have them go watch a bunch of rugby. Like,
yeah,
tackle like these guys. And yeah, you may give up an extra yard or whatever, but you're also playing a safer sport, or say a safer brand of the sport. And you're probably much more sure tackling if you're doing it, you know, like, because Pete Carroll, that was one of the things that really helped the Legion of Boom, was they preached that style of tackling, that rugby style.
Yep. I'm trying to, like, I don't see any kind of like verbiage ruling. Oh, here we go. Is this it? A knee. Okay. The league has defined a hip drop tackle as using the following technique to bring a player to the ground. Grabs a runner with both hands and wraps, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips or lower body, landing on the, trapping the runner. This is the big part that I don't think a lot of like social media and Twitter and all that jazz is keying in on. Trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. Because that's the part that I think that they're trying to really get out, is you saw it last year with Mark Andrews and the Ravens, where they basically like shattered his ankle. And yeah, the same deal, like Kenyon Drake said, he's like, he goes, I know it ain't a popular opinion. I'm trying to see if I can get his, I should have had all this stuff like keyed up, but I did not.
I mean, we're professionals here, so we're doing it professionally.
That's right. Let's see. Hip drop tackle. Let's just research it. Fred Butts, we appreciate you greatly. He says,
thank you, Mr. Butts.
He said, that's a great band. Don't want to see like legs broke. And that's what they're, I know it's not popular. It automatically brings up the whole, are we just playing, you know, flag football? And I get it. But that's just like, there's certain techniques that you just don't want to encourage. Yeah, here's Kenyon Drake's tweet. He says, I don't care about popular opinion. I lost my right ankle in a quarter of the 21 season to this type of tackle. Something had to give, and I'm glad it's not anybody's legs or ankles anymore. Because that was something that had popped up in the last few years. You know, you're watching defenders like fully just drop dead weight trying to pull these guys down. I mean, you saw it with, okay, Here's a good analogy. Here's a good example for you. Horse collar.
Yep.
Did flagging horse collars ruin the game of football?
No.
Right. I mean, so with that being said, Chris has a good point. He says there's only like 18 incidents of swivel hip drop tackles in 23, but over 50% led to injuries.
Well, but here's what I heard was, I was watching a video about this, and they were saying something like, in 2023, they saw like these crazy percentages increase year over year from 2022 with that particular type of tackle. And they were seeing like one per game.
Right.
Now, if you're saying 18 of them in 2023, then we're talking at least one every week. But the way they were saying it in there, I guess maybe the way they categorized that particular type of technique.
Well, see,
they were saying one per game, which was apparently a much bigger the percentage over the year previous was pretty high.
Right. Like, here's one of the like the deals, right? It's like, how is someone supposed to tackle, you know, Kyle or Drake without going low? It's not to prevent you from going low. It's directly to are you pulling up an example of it?
I'm gonna see if I can find it. But
okay, if you can, I will. So King says it's football, the part of making millions on millions. How's a defensive player supposed to tackle? Because now they're going to make it to where the defensive player gets hurt. That's the part where there's a part of that I agree with you there, King. It is making it harder on the defensive player. Because now you're talking about a strike zone that they have to hit so that they don't get fined. And it's going to be a little herky jerky to begin with. But as you get used to teaching it and as they get used to doing it, it shouldn't take these guys long to incorporate it and make it a part of their game. But yes, there is a deal where, you know, how are these guys supposed to do their job, right? Let's see. Do you got one yet? Because
I can't find it.
Okay. Let's see if Twitter will be nice to me today. Or not nice to me on this video.
Just scroll and see if maybe it just happens to pop up.
So this is the Mark Andrews one. See? You see how when he went down, let's back it up some, he kind of wrapped his legs around him. See? That's what they're trying to get out of there. And so when he goes down, then you end up sandwiching legs. So let's see if we can, it'll show it better here. So this is what they're trying to get rid of. He grabs him, drops down, and then boom, pins his knees and stuff under him. That's what they're trying to remove.
Yeah, and we've seen that a bunch of times, whether it's this one or I've noticed this trend like this over probably the past, I don't know, 3-4 years, where you start to see a bunch more of this kind of tackling happen, especially when it's talking about like cornerbacks going up against tight ends, trying to like use their weight, like leverage what weight they do have and use it to try to bring guys down. And I've seen quite a few injuries pop up because like 9 times out of 10, if I see an injury, it was a lot of times because of a tackle like this.
King also, like, I get what you're saying here. He's like, yeah, but as a smaller player, usually tackling a way bigger player. So how does a smaller guys choose to tackle someone of that size? It's insane. It definitely puts the defensive player in a bind. But I will say this. They haven't always tackled like this.
Yeah.
Right? And so if they haven't always tackled like this, that means this is a new technique that they have learned. Right. So in that case, if this is a new technique they have learned, it's a new technique that we can unlearn and we can figure out some other way to do it. You know, also at the end of the day, we all know as much as like the defensive guys are, you know, the guys who play defense or, guys like Damski who are, defensive by nature, as far as like football is concerned, it sucks for those guys. And what I mean by that is, like, it's always going to be harder on y'all because they just like the steroid era in baseball, home run sells, points sell. They want, they want points. They want it to be fun for the, for fans to enjoy. That's part of the business. That's part of marketing as much as it annoys everybody. But they also don't want an instance where, especially now with more running quarterbacks across the entire league, they don't want your guys to get took out. You know what I'm saying? What you got there?
So I got a couple of examples. So let me pause that real quick. Bring this up. Or do you guys can you guys see this? Okay.
Yeah. We okay. Should.
All right. So. You'll see it here to say it. So this guy right here, he weighs something like 200-ish pounds. The guy that's going to tackle him is 167 pounds. So giving
40, up 40 pounds difference there.
35, 40 pounds difference. And this guy is rumbling, stumbling, and then this guy's coming in at an angle. In the NFL, like tackle right here, most likely with this size difference, you're going to see the defender – grab him around the waist, just dead weight drop, and then it be just because of the momentum his body's going to swing around and take out the guy's legs, and that's when you get the problem that we're running into now. This guy, he just grabs him, and then instead of he basically like drags his body, like lets his body just kind of go forward with the momentum.
Right, you should be able to see a better angle here, probably. Yeah.
See, now he doesn't let his body is in front of this guy, or to the side at the very least, or at the very best, and so he's still able to bring him down, because at the end of the day, one of the things we've talked about is how do you bring down a bigger guy when you're a smaller guy like that. It doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are. If you can't move if you're moving like that, and then all of a sudden there's an obstruction to your legs, and your legs can't work like they're supposed to at that speed, you're going to go down.
Right.
So it doesn't take you having to take out, essentially do a, what's that called? We used to see it in wrestling all the time where the guy would do the tackle into the back of the knee. Is that called? It's called something else. I can't remember. But that's outlawed. You can't do that in the NFL.
Right.
But that's essentially what you're doing with the hip drop tackle is, but you're doing it with your whole body. Hmm. You're hitting the back of the legs, which causes them to buckle, and then that everything gets stuck up underneath your body.
Nighthawk said the figure four.
No, sharpshooter, man.
The scorpion deathlock, baby. Come on now.
Scorpion deathlock.
No. Don't nobody like Bret Hart. No, I'm just kidding.
But anyway, I cannot believe that I would have known this like literally 10 minutes ago. But anyway, so that's one example. Another one I want to show you is, I believe it's this guy right here. So again, what we have here is we have this guy. He's a pretty big dude. You'll see him. Maybe.
Yeah, I think Twitter does not like the streaming, like playing a video while you're streaming, because that's exactly what it was doing on my end. That crap.
Well, here's another one. So this guy right here, boom. What did he do? He went down and wrapped his legs up. Boom. There you go.
But see, they did that for a while, and who was it? Glenn up here saying that he's going to be drafting a bunch of Bijan in Dynasty because of this rule now. because guys like Bijan, that's how they made their money, right? It was being able to get out of those like arms at the legs kind of deal. But that's where contact balance and all that becomes like super important. But again, the NFL haven't always dropped their body weight like that. That's a relatively new, technique. So these guys they'll just have to adjust. And it sucks that it's almost always the defense that has to adjust. But a few years back, you had the helmet to helmet, and that was generally, that was like a running back thing,
Only within certain places can you do it now.
Right.
Like lower the helmet down like that. Once you're like out on the side, the wings and space, you can't do that anymore. So,
right. Charleston says, have we listened to Raheem speak earlier today? I haven't like listened to it, but I've seen, clips, and that's something that we are obviously going to be talking about today. So let's get to some of those comments. Let me get that pulled up. Because Raheem had some good
stuff.
There was
one more rule that I'm trying to remember that got some talk about today. I'm trying to remember.
One of the things was like being able to have the sky judge call down on
roughing a passer
and intentional grounding was the two that I was thinking about. And I thought that that was, I was like, good, finally. Like, yeah, we have that technology. Why are we not using it to its fullest extent? I understand that you want to keep your, you know, the human element of the game. But my God, just like in baseball, we have the ability to accurately call balls and strikes every time. You know, so why are we not using it? Why are we just not getting it right? You know, and, yeah, and I think that's the same deal here.
I also think with the new hip drop stuff, if you're, if you really want to kind of push that as like, that is not the way we want our guys tackling, it's fine. Like, if you know, if you get a guy that does that kind of tackle, but if you see either him or just the team in general have a consistent, yeah, consistently, they're the ones that are getting flagged for this. There may need to be like penalties for like the team, like the organization. Like, hey, you're supposed to be, you know, coaching these guys to not do this. We're seeing this over and over and over again. This is a problem with the way you guys are coaching. So, you know, you need to be held accountable as well. It can't just be the players. I think that would be the best way to kind of really hit that home.
And another thing that they could really do, and Millie's kind of hitting it here, and you're talking about it as well, is like, he says, at the end of the day, the refs are going to call whatever they want to call at whatever time they want to call it. Does it really matter? He says, it's going to cost the team a playoff win, and people are going to cry again.
People are going to cry about everything.
But I'll say this, you could stop some of that crying. It's at least from the fans' perspective, if you would at least publicly like say, hey, we have fined this ref this amount of money or what have you. Like, if we knew that there was some, and you get it every now and again, hey, this team isn't going to be calling playoffs. Like, this ref squad isn't going to be doing playoffs or what have you. But if they came out like on Mondays or let's say Tuesdays, if they came out on Tuesdays and was like, oh, yeah, this, you know, had like public demerits or whatever for the refs because of screw ups, I think that that would help, in my opinion.
I mean, maybe. But
maybe to me. I don't know.
The problem is like they don't necessarily
fine them and suspend them. Like, if you get, like, say you get three mistakes, you know, after your third, like, major mistake or whatever, you like your flagrant, like we could do flagrants on the refs, right? Like, you're like a flagrant one. I don't know what the worst one is for an NBA, but if they had like a varying degree of your third technical, you know, you're suspended a game or something. That might at least acknowledge that the refs make mistakes in a sense.
Yeah, but also I don't know. Like I said, it's just one of those situations where I really think what they need to do with all the billions they're making is invest in let's get essentially a reffing university and full-time refs, give them give them a path, and then make that path available, which it would be anyways. This is not like any grand thought here, but make that available to former players, you know, who have played the game and understand the situations and
right
things like that a little bit better than say a guy who
a lawyer
maybe played football in college, maybe as late as high school, and that's about it, right? You know, but then has been an accountant, a lawyer, or whatever, and that's their life outside of football. Like, you know, make it so that guys who maybe are just not quite good enough to make it to the NFL, but they were able to play in college. There's a pipeline that they can provide to college and say like, hey, new guys, they're gonna start here, work their way up, and they can make it to the NFL.
Right.
And have them be full time so that when they're in the off season, all they're doing is looking at tape and what went, you know, this call, why was it wrong to make this call, or why did we miss this call?
And if they had something like that, I'd sign up to be a ref. Willie Doc, appreciate you following. He says, hey, P4P in chat, we'll catch you on the replay. Thank you. He says, thanks for the great work. Now I am on the trade back bandwagon for Latu. I hear you on that trade back bandwagon. Speaking of, let's see, Dre Murphy says, JR, well, if that's the case, then they need to go back and give that ref a fine to call him pass interference on Grady, on Tom freaking Brady. Yeah, no, like, we need to get that kind of stuff right. Like, it's not that hard, you know. Let's see, get some of these other comments. He says we need quarterback chaos. Yeah, that would be fun. We'll get into that here in just a minute. So let's get into some of the comments from the talking to the media availability. This is the first time since the combine that we've heard from from Terry and from Raheem. So after like the majority of like free agency, you know. So let's see. One of the comments that so they're talking about, you know, Kirk Cousins, they were asked about the tampering. This is the first time they've kind of publicly acknowledged it in a sense that they're being investigated. And from Arthur to Terry to everybody, you know, all basically, hey, we can't really talk about it, but we feel like that we didn't do anything wrong. So obviously that's what they're going to say, but the fact that they did more than just say it's an ongoing investigation and we can't talk about it, you know, that kind of makes me feel a little bit better. We'll see how it all boils out. Raheem was asked about, you know, Kyle Pitts, and he called him the mayor of Atlanta. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Did you see the comment about them having conversations with Calais Campbell? I thought that was kind of interesting.
I did not.
So he says, this is from Tori McElhaney's article that she has written up on the website. So I'll just go ahead and post that up. So make sure all credit is given. Well, I say, add two stage. Thank you. So says, one of Falcons' most obvious needs is after acquiring quarterback is practically coming off the edge. So it made sense that Calais Campbell's name came up in conversations in the owners' meeting. Campbell's one of the most effective pass rushers for the Falcons, tying Bud Dupree with 6.5 sacks. Morris said that he and Campbell had spoken, particularly about the longtime veteran's future in Atlanta. Though Morris said he wanted to keep the conversation private, he was willing to say that there's a vision in place if Campbell would like to remain with the Falcons. So I thought that was an interesting part to that. You know, if he wants to be here, they have a plan, you know, to bring him back. He says he also follows up and says, I look forward to getting a chance to sitting in front of him because he's impressive as it gets when it comes to football character. And he's impressive of the careers you can have. That's stuff that you would like that he still brings to the game, to us moving forward. And I look forward to discussing that in detail with him a later date. And so it doesn't sound like the door is closed on Calais at all.
Yeah. Which I'm happy to hear, whether or not he actually comes back or not, who knows. But I would love to have him back. Because for one, he's an add on to the pass rush.
Right.
He's an add to run defense. The guy's a leader, a vet that a lot of, you know, young guys can look up to and emulate and all those things. Just would really like to have him back again, if he's willing to come back, whether it's to the Falcons or anybody else, who knows? But yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, if he wants to come back, like Gabriel's over here saying, man, that man's 40, let him retire.
if he wants to retire,
hey, look, if he wants to come back, 6.5 6.5 snacks last year.
Yep.
There's nothing to sneeze at per se.
I mean, he's got nothing on me. I get like 6.5 snacks in like a day or two.
There it is. They're also stated that, you know, that they're probably going to add like a young corner. Raheem Morris's statements there. I'm trying to see if I can find
Daniel. Oh, I just saw one here.
Daniel Flick had those earlier today. So let's the kid, Daniel Flick.
Well, he said Raheem Morris says Falcons will add young corners, calls it an area of need.
Right.
You know, when talking about, you know, he said, you know, as far as the pass rush goes, whether it be with a vet or a rookie, that will be addressed. I saw one where he was like, as long as – essentially, this is a paraphrase, but essentially like, as long as I'm head coach here, there will never not be a time that I'm looking to add to that.
Right, exactly.
When it comes to the pass rush.
Right, and as he should be, especially like here in Atlanta, so to speak.
Yeah.
Fred Butts, we appreciate your $2.
Thank you, Mr. Butts.
We're going to get DN first after hearing Raheem speak. If I had to call it right now, I would say your first round draft pick is either a corner or a defensive end.
Yep.
And I don't think that that's too much of a stretch, really. Let's see. I'm trying to see.
So now the other thing that he did talk about, you know, he mentioned, obviously didn't commit to, you know, the draft as far as QBs go. They say we have to go back and reevaluate those guys for the draft again because our situation has changed.
Right.
So, you know, they're probably going to talk about, you know, probably looking more so at if they do pick up a quarterback, it's like second, third, fourth round. Is that a Penix? Is that a Ritter? Or not Ritter, a Rattler?
Right.
You know,
it's
whoever else.
It's, you know, they specifically said to come in and compete with Heinicke for the backup job.
Yep.
So it doesn't sound like Heinicke is a lock to be QB2. He probably has an inside path with, you know, Ken Zampezi being on staff, but he's not guaranteed that position. Because yep. One thing you got to keep in mind, as it stands right now, we got like $3 million in cap space, and it's going to cost about $12 to sign to sign your draft class is what I was reading.
That seems high.
Yeah, I thought so too. Man, I thought so. I'm glad. Okay, I am glad you said that because when I read that, I was like,
"Did I want to say
like, miss like, something?" I thought it was six.
It's anywhere between like five and seven is what I've seen in the past generally.
Let's see cost.
Unless there's been some hike in the rookie pay scale due to
that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Due to the rise in the salary cap,
potentially. Right? Cost to let's see if I can figure this out. Okay, according to Over the Cap. They're saying the rookie pool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have the Falcons listed at – this is where that number's coming from. I don't know exactly how they're, like, calculating it. But the rookie – the cap pool, because of the value at 8, the value at 43, and so on, is $12.2 million. So they're going to have to pick up $10 million at minimum, and that's just the sign – the draft class. So
yeah, I'm not worried about it because I don't think they would let themselves get into a position where they're like, well, crap, now we can't sign all of our rookies, or something along those lines. I don't think they would be there has to be a plan. Some of that might be like post June 1st stuff because you got to remember, a lot of these guys don't get signed until like July, August.
Oh, yeah. Until like right before like summer camp. Training camp starts as far as the rookies. It's not something that they got to do right now. And I guess while we're on it, we can just look at this real quick. Let's go to teams, Falcons, because I know they got a calculator and a million pop-ups. If you've ever used what you call it, man, they got.
Man, I'm telling you right now.
I know. I've got one. I've got a whole browser. I just don't have it pulled up. I still have Google as my default. Okay.
Ad block, man. Get that stuff.
I know. Anyway, that's how these folks make their money. I don't pay for them. So I'm just trying not to gripe. Okay. Here we go. If you were to cut say you bring in a guy, you know, a Penix or a Rattler, and you cut Heinicke. That brings you up to 8 just by cutting him.
Well, that's pre June 1st cut.
Right. So, yeah, they didn't give it me post June. So, okay. Pre June, and then so maybe Lorenzo Carter. Like, if you get a handful of young guys, or you bring in somebody else,
maybe
there's like you cut Lorenzo and Heinicke. There's your draft, but that leaves you with nothing after that.
Yeah.
So I would think, you know, maybe a Mike Hughes, that would get you 15. Ogundeji. Would you want to keep Ogundeji around? He's kind of fallen off a little bit or not really developed. That puts you at 18. And
so, okay, so, but we're not also looking at like restructures for.
No. For yeah, like I'm not looking at that either. Like, I'm just trying to look at guys that you could easily get rid of. And so, like, you could do a restructure. And, well, they're going to make me. So, I was just going to restructure the base. You restructure Jake, you're up to 28.
Yeah.
You restructure Grady because say you don't want to get rid of him. You're up to 35. You restructure, I undo that. Restructure Chris. These are all the max. You're up to 44.
Yeah.
So they've got break glass in case of emergency, you know, for whatever it is.
And if I was going to restructure, so like maybe Jarrett, maybe not Matthews, but maybe you leave him there. But like Jesse Bates.
Okay, yeah. So because, some guys that are going to be on your team for the next 3 or 4 years anyway.
Yes.
So if you were to restructure him, submit, restructure, you're at 43.
Yep.
So say you don't want to restructure Matt. But you restructure Grady, Chris, and Jesse.
Okay, so AJ Terrell, let's say we were to get him a new contract.
See, I don't know what it would be or prorated, not prorated.
Just do.
What does Sneed get?
Like 19?
All right, let's just do 15. Or let's do 17. Oh, that's a 3. How's that? There. 17. That look right?
All right. Yeah. Let's say.
How many years?
You got to add the years. There you go.
Son of a gun. This is getting complicated.
do it because you'd probably do 4 years. Let's try 4 years.
Okay. Base salary, $17 million each time.
Well, so base salary for 2024, we're going to want to bring down.
All right.
And yeah, so that there you would do like prorated bonuses and things like that. So just cancel this because we'll have to play around with this. but
we'll make a base salary. Bam, we made a base salary of $1 million this year.
So there. what we got to look at is let's say that we do give him. Let's say we do give him $17 million, his average over the life of this new contract, right? New money is 17, or let's say $16 million a year. Okay. Right. We want to do, say, a 4-year extension. So that would, you know, wrap up 2024 into it, give you another 4 years past that. You would take this year's salary and basically like drop it down to like $1 million.
Right.
And that'll save you 11 this year. You give him, and then you take however much is left on the overall number that we wanted to hit. And we figure out what's the best way to structure that so that, you know, maybe next year his rate goes up a little bit higher. And then the year after that, it goes up even higher. And then that third year or the fourth year is when it's like, it goes back down. or gets to the point where you can
walk away from it.
You can walk away from it with the least amount of hit.
What we were trying to get at before we got off into the weeds there was
we got Tangent City there.
Yeah, we got Tangent City big time. Was like they have options. Like they're obviously not going to just stick it. I expect other things to be done. Tony Wright's got a good question for us. This is J.R. Jonathan said, if Minnesota calls Atlanta and offers them their first round pick at 12, which I think they have 11, but maybe it's 12, and their second first rounder at 23 for our 8 overall, and they want J.J. McCarthy, your thoughts on that move?
I would do that all day, every day.
Yeah, I would take both of the first rounders, and just for craps and giggles, like, I'd have to look at the trade chart value or whatever, but, you know, if they'd be willing to throw in like another, like a late round, like a fourth or a fifth, maybe next year, sure.
Yeah.
You know, but if we could come away with 11 and 23
this year,
12 and 23 this year, yeah, I'd give them 8 all day long.
Especially if it is 11, because again, I think by the time we get to 8, there's a very good chance all three of the pass rushers that we believe are the top of the board will be there. If we drop back to 11, we get another first round pick, and we guarantee ourselves to get at least one of the three of the best pass rushers in this draft.
All right, well let's see if we can play out this scenario real quick as we go to start to wrap the show up. I have ad blockers on, so y'all don't have to worry about that.
Woo-hoo!
All right. So here we go. We're going to see what we're offered. Okay. The Bengals, 8, 49, 97. Washington, 36, 40, 67. Nope. They can get bent. Minnesota. In this particular one, they're offering 11 and 25 from 25's first round pick. Ooh. So is that enough of a offer? So, yeah, Chris was saying it's 11 and 23. So in this scenario, they're offering us 11 and next year's first. Is that enough for you? Or would you rather 18, 49, and 97 this year?
So I think I would take – okay, if I'm the Falcons, I probably do take that pick from or take the trade from Minnesota simply because then what you're looking at is let's say that we do just enough to get in the playoffs. So we're still kind of in the middle of the pack, but maybe Minnesota, even with J.J. McCarthy and what have you, maybe they just all like a lot of the stuff that happened this year and at last couple of years where they've been really good in like tight games. Kind of just flips it on its head again, you know, like everybody's been expecting. And now they're still in all those tight games, but not as many of them, ball bounce their way. So then we look at possibly an earlier pick in next year's draft along with our mid-round pick. And that gives us the option to then go look for if we feel like we need wide receiver, if we need another
pass rush, O-line,
to go behind Jake Matthews, then I think that gives us a lot more freedom next year to do whatever we need to do. And it also gives us, if we feel like we're in the mid rounds, and it gives us more ammo to try to move up in the draft, to try to go and get a quarterback if we of the future, if we feel like we need to.
So let's take this one. And who did okay. Not doing anymore. So who did they end up taking with our pick?
Number 8. They took Daniels.
Okay. Well, it's because this one they had JJ going third.
Yep.
Okay, yep. So now we're sitting here. You got Dallas Turner and Latu and all three of them. So let's for sake of argument this time, let's go Latu. I think a lot of the
I really want Latu.
So we'll go Latu and say that that's more of a – so second-round pick, I ain't worried about it, go away. All right, now you got – you could get Crafty. Michael Penix went to Denver.
Yep.
But you got Bo Nix, Joe Morgan is an offensive tackle, Tyler Newbin is safety, Devondre Sweat, a defensive tackle. Osa Center and Frazier. You could get Cooper Beebe, which is another guard.
What about cornerback?
Rakeshaw is the first. Yeah. Enos Rakeshaw. Rakeshaw is the first corner.
I personally would hold off on the corner right now.
You might be able to catch one with this guy, Renaldo Green, Kalen King, some of those guys.
Yep.
So let's see. DT, you got big guy.
Yep.
Nathan's saying take the corner. Your buddy Brandon Fisk is still there.
Yeah, but he's that's a little rich for 43.
Yeah, a little rich on that one. There's some good D tackles, like Mason Smith. You could like bet on him coming back from an injury. Like, he's a freak. Dwayne Carter and Mekhi Wingo. Like, we can get some defensive tackles. It doesn't have to be Devondre Sweat. So, what do you think?
Dre's like, it's too freaking early to take him. You can probably get him in the second or third round. We're in the second round.
Yeah, we're in the second. We're in the second round. Dre, we are in the second round. We're at our pick in the second.
So So we'll see if Tavondre is there in the third. I think we definitely take him there. Or if he's there and Braden Fisk is there, that'd be a tough one. But
all right, so let's go with a corner. Let's grab Rakeshaw, maybe. Oh, he just doesn't blow me away here at 43, really.
I know. That overall, is just not...
like, your value is Sweat. He said, my bad. And Glenn says, I would go Sweat for sure. All right, let's go Sweat.
One of my first mock drafts had me taking, I think it was either Dallas Turner or Jared Verse in the first round. And in the second round, I took Tavondre Sweat. I think I've done that in like two or three mock drafts because I really like Sweat.
Yeah, all right, we're going Sweat. We'll add the beef in the middle. All right, now we got Peyton Willis, Jonathan. I ain't going. Here's Brandon Fisk. We could get Roman Wilson. Add on to the edge with Brandon Dorlus.
So let's see. If I'm going edge here, If I'm double dipping on edge, I'm probably picking up Nealon.
The cornerback is Chris Ambrose Durain. This 85, a little rich for right here. So I really Ron Wilson.
Well, so we got another pick coming up in like four or five picks.
Yeah, so we could grab. All right, so do we want Ron Wilson? Do we want Marshawn Nealon?
What are the other wide receivers right now? Because I wouldn't mind taking a receiver here.
Roman Wilson, Jalen McMillan, who's interesting. Johnny Wilson, Jermaine Burton, Malachi Washington. It kind of drops off after Roman Wilson, to be honest.
What about Jalen McMillan?
Jalen McMillan. He's not bad. McMillan is he's Washington. Let's see. He's a move the sticks. Yeah, he's a move the sticks kind of guy. He was the third wide receiver on that Washington's team.
Okay.
So, if I'm going anybody here, I'm going Roman Wilson.
Glenn Revis is like, what about Wilson linebacker here?
Let's see where I just saw him.
Go down.
There it is, Peyton Wilson. So, he's the guy who was like stupidly athletic at the combine. Twitched up is what, but he's dealt with some injuries, but he's like a sideline to sideline speed guy. So he's alert coverage linebacker. What did I say?
With a great blind spot
IQ, spatial awareness, and hip leverage. I wouldn't be against it. King says we need a cornerback, which we can grab one. at 79 for sure. So, I mean, Peyton Wilson does give us some positional value. We're at 74. They got him rated 65. So you want to go linebacker?
I feel like we need a wide receiver. I feel like we need a guy who could potentially be, you know, if Mooney doesn't turn out to be the number two, we need a guy that could potentially be the number two.
Right.
And I'm thinking he's Michigan.
Yeah, the Michigan guy. He's
Roman Wilson.
All right, let's go Roman Wilson. We'll see if Peyton Willis is still there. Reject. He is. So do we want to go linebacker? Do we want to go center at Cedric Van Pran? Or do we want to look at corner? You got Chris Embraze, the kid out of Missouri, and Kalen King we might be able to pick up next round if we wanted to go to corner there. Come on, chat. What y'all think?
Byron?
He was asking because Dre had forgotten Byron Murphy's name, which is the one that made for Trevon. He's going in the first round. Let's see. I think we can get one of these corners in the next round. So
maybe. So yeah, go ahead and hit him.
Yeah, we'll go with. I haven't mocked him yet. So all right, here we go. We're going to go corner here for sure. So we got Kyrie Jackson, Cam Hart. Cam Hart's pretty good. And
what size is Cam Hart?
Cam Hart is 6'3", 202.
Ooh.
Big corner. Big corner. Nathan Floyd says Cam Hart.
Yep. I'm thinking you don't run across very many 6'3", 200 plus pound with that kind of athleticism.
All right, so our quick four round mock here, we got Latu
heavy on defense.
Yes, the complete opposite of the
free agency
period. Latu to begin with, followed up by Trevondre Sweat, sprinkled a little bit of speed and separation in there with Roman Wilson, added some more freak athleticism to the linebacking core with Peyton Wilson, and added a potential running mate in the secondary in Cam Hart. And we also picked up a first-round pick for next year in the process.
Yep. Yep.
Now, next week we're going to take a little bit more time. We kind of blitzkrieged that one because we're, you know, coming up at the end of the show. But next week we're going to do a more, like, in-depth mock. We're going to have possibly one half of Out of Your Falcon Mind joining us in John Yates. And maybe another guest, depending. We'll see how that goes. I don't want to tip my hand there. Oh, I made you all little. Don't do that. I don't need to be little. So, but yeah, I think that turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
We can hit this real quick. This is a good reminder of don't really buy into everything you read, because right before the show started, the news broke that CPA 84 followed Arthur Smith out to Pittsburgh along with we didn't really touch on it, but along with Van Jefferson. So for all these people that were all like, even CP was out on Arthur, obviously not too much.
Yeah.
Because he went and took his typical $3 million a year deal. He signed a 2-year $6 million deal out there at Pittsburgh. And to go with the only OC that has used them like properly in a sense.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that was funny. Like just another narrative that gets smashed in a sense.
As King Seb said, hit the like button, people. Come on
Yeah. Well, as we have said before, tell a friend to tell a friend.
Yeah.
Because we would like this thing to continue to grow. We have a good showing here on a weekly basis, and we would love for it to get even better. But I think that's pretty much going to do it for us today, bro, unless you got something else.
We can
start talking about this, I guess. Start teasing.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're going to do, a lot of times we spend so much focus on the big names, the first round guys, the second round guys, to where by the time the draft rolls around, like, we know these guys real well. So what me and Jonathan are going to do the next few weeks on Friday, Saturday, depending on when we can record, we're going to start up a series called The Best of the Rest, where we try to highlight some of the guys who are deeper in the draft pool that could still be contributors that you may not have heard of. And so hopefully y'all join us for that when those recordings come out.
Unlike last year, it'll end up being something similar to this, but last year we very specifically were like, this week we're going to talk about these guys, defensive line and edge and then this and that. Each week we may get some of this, similar guys that we're looking at, but I don't think as long as we're not talking about the same guys week in and week out. So this will be a little bit more free form, like whatever we want to bring to it. Just want to try to have a little fun looking at some of the guys deeper down which it can be kind of tough to find those guys. So
Chris says, I do enjoy me some day three guys. And that's it. It's like, it's the day three guys that have, caught our attention. It's the day two, day three guys. The ones that have caught our attention.
The day three guys, they may not have the same splashy impact as the day one or day two guys, but the day three guys are the guys that really make your team.
Yeah, I mean,
look, if you don't land some guys there to at least be contributors, they don't have to be the stars. They don't have to be a Grady Jarrett or what have you, but they need to be able to contribute to the team and not be a hindrance. And if you hit in that spot with those kinds of guys on a consistent basis, your team's going to be pretty good.
That's it. And then we're going to try to find some of those guys.
Yep.
So we appreciate y'all, as always.
Absolutely.
We appreciate y'all hanging out with us for the hour or so that we do this every week. Keep your eye on the channel as we just laid out what's coming up. As always, we could be having guests on. I try every week to get people who I think y'all might be interested in hearing from on.
Like Terry Fontenot, he's trying, dudes, but sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Sometimes it just don't work out, You try. Some folks just don't answer back,
Yeah.
We ain't big time enough. Maybe if y'all will tell a friend to tell a friend, we can then get big enough to attract some bigger names. Anyway, we appreciate y'all as always. All jokes aside, we wouldn't be doing this if y'all didn't show up.
One last thing and then we'll get out of here. We are still planning, I know this has been asked, I think we've actually said this before as well, but we are still planning, unless something dramatic changes, we are still planning draft night to stream the entire night.
We'll be live the first round, definitely live the first round, probably live the second round, second, third round as well. And I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to start trying to line up, guests and people to stop by and chat with us while we're doing that. But yeah, we'll definitely be doing that this year unless something
maybe do day three, which it might be just a me thing. But we'll see.
It could be, what we've done in the past is as soon as it's over with on day three, we go live and recap the whole thing. So, all right. We appreciate y'all. As always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128, GRIMM1128.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by and say hi.
That's it. As always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.